Your call is being answered by Audix.
Nat Friedman.
Is not available. To leave a message, wait for the tone. Otherwise, for assistance, press 0 now. Record at the tone.
Monkeys!
Coming to you from the British Midlands, this is Novell Open Audio.
What is it?
This is Lug Radio.
Thank you very much.
Hey, season 3, episode 14.
Yeah, we've got a guest in the house.
Indeed we have.
This is Ted Hager from Novell.
Talking of Novell, we haven't got an interview
with Nat Friedman.
And it's going to be excellent.
Yeah. I've got so many questions not to ask him. So
yeah, although you'd be very pleased to hear we were abusive on his voicemail about it.
But he was on the limited section.
Yeah, that's cool.
So I suppose we should introduce ourselves. Who are you, Master of
Paul? I'm Abe Bradshaw.
I'm Matthew Revolt.
I'm Stuart Langridge.
I'm John O'Bacon. And of course, we've got Ted Hagar. So what are we going to talk about in the show?
Well, we should have
why
a chat about...
Why?
Everyone looking at each other nervously, saying, I can't fucking remember.
Why are there a million media players on Linux? And you need to have them all installed.
Why?
Another thing we could talk about is our new feature, collars and cuffs. Do they match?
Do they match? It's the quintessential question.
Yep, the quintessential question we will be asking Ted Hager from Novell, as he's here, does Novell's walk match its talk?
Yeah, it's, I'm sure it's going to be really interesting.
I think it probably is better.
Do your collars and cuffs match?
What's a collar?
Drapes and
carpet muncher,
hoagie bars, or whatever.
Mr. Jonathan E.J. Bacon went to Microsoft to be preached at for a week, and he's now going to come back and tell us how good Microsoft research is.
We're going to talk about whether the open source community can do research,
and then we'll have an outro.
Oh yeah, sorry, that's the way you wanted to put it.
Yes, that is the way I wanted to put it. That's the truth.
Okay, let's get on with it then.
Let's do it.
Go.
Right, we did the Y-O-Y thing.
Why did we do that?
Why? People seem to like it.
Oh, it's a new segment, right.
A guy wrote in with an email, actually, right, and said that he liked it, which is cool. So
let's do that later.
In the email section.
Yeah.
Oh, right, yeah, right, I get it.
As if it's somehow scheduled.
That's scheduled in England.
Scheduled. Hey, is it scheduled in America?
No,
is it what?
Is it scheduled in America?
Is it scheduled or scheduled? Do you have like marbles in your mouth or something?
Is it scheduled in the United States of America?
It's scheduled. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you, ma'am. Please move on.
We were talking about
American.
So. Anyway, I believe we had a point to be made.
Yeah, the YOY thing. So, YOY, are there a shitload of media players on Linux?
Yeah.
And you've got to have more than one installed. There doesn't seem to be one that does everything that I want. I've got VLC and Totem. And M-Player.
I never want
to
see your
totem. Do you want me to tell you why?
Rhythm Box.
No caffeine.
And I just need them all. And it's really fucking annoying.
Right, do you want me to tell you why, Sil? Eh? Do you want me to tell you why?
Okay.
Sil A. It's because all these bastards out there are just scratching their own itches selfishly. And I don't give a shit about you, mate. They're just scratching their own itch. Go proprietary, you know, it makes sense.
I've always rubbed against the idea of scratching some other sweaty bloke's itch, to be honest. It just doesn't sound like a good thing.
There's good money in it, I tell you. So, take it from me.
So, okay, we'll take it from you.
No, it's a good this point. I agree with you. That you can't just have one media player. I mean, you need more than one.
Yeah, if you look at Totem, for example, Totem doesn't play any of the proprietary formats. Mm-hmm. For me, because I don't know how to go and get all the codecs that do it.
No, but that's because you run Ubuntu.
Well, possibly.
It is an easy script,
possibly it is because I run Ubuntu.
There is, but it can screw up things as well. It can work really well, but the easy script way thing...
It says, you do this, and it runs and it breaks everything. You get to keep both bits, right? Which is not good enough.
So you're basically saying, let me get this right, you're basically saying, I'll use one media player for, let's say, playing video, and I might use another media player for doing podcasts, I might use another media player for...
I might use two. I'm prepared to have something which plays video and a completely different program that plays music. I'm quite happy with that.
But I think his point is you need more than one client to even play different videos.
Are you saying that you want the one true media player that will do the lot?
I don't know.
The holy grail.
I don't know whether we want one thing which is, because I've got a huge complicated program that does everything. It does all the library management of Rhythmbox And part of the point is that I don't want Rhythmbox to be my default media player when I just click on an MP3 and play it. Because then it'll take it and it'll put it into the library. I'm not interested in that. If I just downloaded a 30-second MP3
but that's,
to listen to it, you know, a quote from a movie but that's, or something, I don't want it to start in Rhythmbox.
No, that's a bug in terms of double-clicking on an MP3. So it's fine for your media player for it to load Rhythmbox, but it's not fine for it to catalogue it into your thing. But then again, the way I see it is that, you know, like on Apple, for example, you know, like on Apple, if you double-click on an MP3, it'll pop it up in like a noddy kind of media player or something such as QuickTime. Whereas if you want a library full of stuff, you use something like iTunes. Mm. In the same way that in GNOME now, when you double-click on an image, it pops it up into Eye of GNOME. And then if you want to do something more detailed with
Eye of Gnome.
Eye of Gnome. Yeah. It's from Thundercats.
Okay.
The sword that bent in the middle.
The sword of omens.
The sword of Eye of Gnomes.
Yeah. But isn't this what GStream is for, though? Because the GStreamer framework does all the hard stuff, and then if you want something to just simply play a little clip, then you write a thing that plugs into the GStreamer functionality.
But then there'll be another thing someone's written. I'd have to have that as well as got XMMS as well, because iPodder depends on it.
No, but I thought the whole point of GStreamer was that it got rid of all this shit and you just had one underlying framework.
You've got one underlying framework.
Can I just say, by the way, you should play it all and do it all.
You should be using GPodder, because you can choose your media player and that.
GPodder.
Well, yeah, perhaps.
GPodder. So let's you know, we've got Ted on the show. Let's move this round to Novell.
Oh, great!
So as
what
the,
are you going to do about
as,
it?
Yeah, go on.
I was going to say,
why haven't you fixed it yet?
I was going to say, as the canonical spokesman for Novell, but obviously he's
you
not
say the
canonical.
Word canonical every single time we do a show.
Say what?
Canonical.
I'm just indoctrinated.
Yes,
it's. I want to work Mark Shuttleworth's crank, like in. Everybody looks
I know you do.
Can I have a go on the crank, Mr. Shuttleworth? That's what Eric Raymond says, apparently. So the default thing that comes with NLD is Banshee. Am I right?
Well, you got Banshee, but you don't have just Banshee, because Banshee is going to be your main thing for MP3s or for your audio stuff. It doesn't do video right now. Now, is somebody going to write a plugin for that? Maybe.
Right.
But I mean, you've got Totem there as well. So the problem that you're saying, I mean, even through the betas that I'm looking at right now, that's still there.
Yeah.
You've still got multiple players, and of course, because Banshee runs on top of the Helix player, you've of course also got Real Player on board.
Right.
And you know, we actually with SUSE Linux Enterprise Desktop, we actually put it in the package. Yeah. So that adds yet another one. This one's a proprietary one.
Yeah.
So now you've got a few different things. So do I know what the answer is? Well, as the non-canonical spokesman for Novell. No, I don't know what the answer is. I think you're still going to see that until there's actually something that actually provides all the features that you want in one place. And I haven't found that in media players that I've worked with.
Is VLC going to do it?
It's a visible panty line, is it? What's that?
No.
Video land plan.
VLC is... I thought to myself, I'd like to use VLC because I don't really like MPlayer. I don't like the way MPlayer goes about things. So I thought, I'll use VLC for stuff instead. So I installed that. I thought, I'll have that play everything. Yeah. But it doesn't. It plays just some stuff.
Just out of curiosity.
MPlayer plays everything. Yeah. Man, VLC plays some stuff, not the rest.
Man of Ging, I'm assuming that the reason why you don't want to use MP3 being a man who's committed to the ethics of open source is because you don't want to use all the codecs in MPlayer, is that right?
MP3 is fine. MPlayer, yes, is the...
Pedal back.
I've got no problem with MP3 because I'm using the Fluendo license code that I compiled myself.
In MPlayer?
For GStreamer. No, not for MPlayer. Ah, that's the point.
What's the problem with MPlayer?
I don't like MPlayer because of that.
Nasty.
It uses all the dodgy patent encumbered proprietary.
And also, it's got a nasty interface.
Ah, right, okay.
It has. It's recently started popping up a little playback interface thing I didn't know existed.
So
I thought it was all keys.
So, I mean,
what have I been using the GUI for MPlayer?
No, MPlayer's had a GUI for ages.
I had no idea.
It's had an excuse for a GUI for a while.
It always moans about having the wrong font or something, which goes over the good bits on the
Zine has that problem as well.
Is that not an Ubuntu problem? Because it runs fine in Red Hat.
But it also seems like MPlayer takes more of the approach of, you just got to know your keystrokes. You don't need an interface. You just know the keystrokes out there.
It's the Emacs
of medium.
When you surf in one-handed, it's not easy.
Thanks for that pleasurable image. I think part of the problem is that we're focused too much on applications in the modern Linux desktop.
No, we need outcomes.
Whereas we need
You're not doing a presentation now, you know.
No, no, but
I think the problem is we're focused on.
I'll give an example. We should leverage our synergies to achieve maximum business impact.
By the way, how did the Microsoft brainwashing go?
How about you leverage my chin? Okay,
wash his brain that much. It's not coming up much cleaner.
How about right? At the Microsoft thing, this leads on to something interesting, right? At the Microsoft thing,
they had this pretty thing with Windows Media Player. I almost thought using
Shut up. Shut up. At the Microsoft thing, they had
Does it run out of wine?
Skins.
Is that your on hold music?
Sorry. Normal service will be resumed soon. Shut the fuck up. All right.
Boot-shook.
There was a talk about Windows Mobile, and the problem with Windows Mobile that I saw is
the challenge.
If you wanted to do anything in Windows Mobile, you had to know what Outlook was or load an application instead of just accessing the content directly. So I don't see why we should need to know about loading a media application for this and a media application for that. We should basically be able to load media and have something handle it. Which is part of the reason why I think iTunes is so good, because
on my Windows Media Player, I just click on the file and it loads it into Windows Media Player.
So on your Windows Media Player, as a bastion of open source and free software.
Well, there wasn't.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Open source ethics only happens outside of workouts, doesn't it?
You could listen as to why I chose a PDA that's got Windows on it.
Yeah.
Didn't BIOS fix all this 10 years ago though?
Or
BIOS was supposed to be the media off.
Fry being defrosted in the future, and Matt steps out the tube. Didn't BIOS fix this?
Bear with me, right?
I just pulled my cord out.
Have you ever used BIOS?
Yes.
No, obviously not. I was using OS 2 back then.
So yeah,
interesting.
So where do you think it should go then?
I don't know, to be honest with you. I mean, I don't think I want one monolithic media application that does everything, because it'd be rubbish. It'd be like the Outlook of the media world. I wouldn't like it very much. But I quite like the idea of doing something like taking the Eye of Gnome approach, where you don't think I must have Totem or whatever. Bang, I have a video. And it plays. And I mean, part of this is obviously down to all the multimedia shit not working properly, and that's why I need multiple.
But part of the player won't. But if you look, we're all like.
They really need to address media in general, I think.
The thing is, we're all fairly competent, Linux people.
Oh, yeah.
And if you think now, okay, I want to edit video, you'll think, okay, I'm going to use Diva or Pidivy. If you want to listen to music, you're going to use Rhythmbox or Banshee or something.
Or XMMS or...
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the point is,
if we're going to do audio, we should use Jocosha.
Definitely.
Not to play things.
But the point is that if you want to do something, you need to know about this catalogue of applications. And this changes regularly. Like years ago, I want to play media, I've got to use XMMS. And that was the only thing. Everybody used XMMS. And it's just, I think we should take all this kind of application-centric shit out. And
you're
then,
right, but isn't that down to distro makers to sort
partially.
Out?
And we all look at tech.
Yay!
It's Eye of Genome is the answer, isn't it?
What? Genome.
Genome, look at you, talking bloody... Yeah. Foreign.
Gnome.
So what were you guys saying again?
Fix it.
He was bored.
Fix it for a while. Yeah, so...
That's concluded then.
Hey, you said you were going to nudge me when it got interesting. Or when I was on the spot.
We've got a great many larger corporations involved in the open sourcey world these days.
The open sourcey world?
When you say a great many, you mean about five?
I think that's a great many in the scheme of things. You know, in America, as I understand it, they only have 500 corporations, the Fortune 500, and you know, 5 is 1% of that.
Fortune 500?
Yeah,
I feel we're drifting.
Yeah. So anyway, here's the thing,
BRD.
Right? Here's the thing. If you've got blonde hair, you often ask, do your collars and your cuffs match? Do your drapes match the curtains or something?
Surely if you've got the blonde hair, you don't ask that question. It's other people
ask it of you.
It depends.
Someone's going to send us an email saying, what are you on about collars and cuffs? Could you explain that? What is it in America again? Is it drapes and...
Carpet.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Right. Basically, if you munch in the carpet, you see if the drapes are matching.
Can we please focus? Focus, please.
Focus on the question, which is, do a lot of these companies who are involved in open source actually follow through with the things that they claim as their mission, their involvement in open source?
So does what they say match what they do?
Yeah, do they practice what they preach?
Yeah.
Do they walk the talk? And this evening, we thought
and
we'd
walk
talk...
the walk. And then talk the talk and squawk on a balk.
Yeah.
Yes, thank you for that contribution,
John. We thought we'd Bjork.
Because Ted Hager's taken up residence in the Bacon household.
He's sat just there.
He is. I can see him here with his dirty
you
T-shirt.
Can't point on the radio, Johnny.
The face of Neville dropped pizza on his T-shirt.
We thought we'd ask
Delicious.
Him.
Delicious.
We thought we'd ask this chap his personal view... not how representing the company, yeah. On how Neville are living up to what they proclaim, or what we perceive that they proclaim. Now, one of the things that we were chatting about earlier, as we were eating our pizza, was the whole idea that Neville have come into the open source space and said, "Right, we're ditching our 20 years of proprietary history. Here we are, NetWare. Okay, didn't work out anymore. So
I'm
all
not
that this
sure
Linux
they
thing
said
looks
any
good.
Of this, by the way.
Well, maybe this is my interpretation." And don't forget, for once, we actually have someone from the organisation itself to give the truth of the matter.
Mr. Neville himself.
To tell us we all speak bollocks.
Ted Hagar the Horrible, please let us know. Is it true that Neville have come into the open source arena just as a matter of convenience?
Was there actually a question there? There was so much other punctuation. I lost track of where the question mark actually fell and what preceded.
That's not the language divide. We're English. We don't understand what the hell he was going on.
I've learned so well from John of just saying a load of stuff and not actually having a question and then leaving a gap. No, basically, the thing I want to get to is Neville in the open source world simply as a matter of convenience, corporate convenience, or is it that there's been a change of thinking within the organization that says, hey, this might actually be the best way to do things?
Oh, that's... wow, I like the way you asked it this time way better than when you asked it to me earlier. So I think there's been a huge change in culture at Neville, and I think it's still going on. There are still people that don't, I think, get the culture of open source quite that much. And let's not even say culture of open source. There's some people that may not get the culture of community even and how that works. But overall, I think it's taken over Neville. And it's an interesting thing to see how it gets into somebody's mind. And as they get more and more into it, they get more and more into it, which sounds redundant, but I think it makes a lot of sense right now.
It's important to stress as well that you were at Neville before the whole Zimian Sousa thing, weren't you? So you've seen both sides, really, the original Neville and the now newfangled white teeth.
I was one of the NetWare guys. I mean, yeah. I taught it for a few years before joining Neville, and I joined Neville about 8 years ago now.
Right.
Okay. So I've been through both sides, and to answer the question, has it become something inside Neville, or is it just, you know, kind of a marketing point? Because you do see it in Neville's marketing. We say we're open for business. We say, you know, there's all kinds of open.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, aside from the marketing guys having a new word to throw around, there's, I think, a pretty good power to it. And it doesn't just have to affect open source software. Meaning, yeah, we are doing huge amounts of things in the desktop. We're all over the place in the desktop. We're also driving a lot of stuff on data center using SUSE Linux Enterprise Server as the foundation for that. But you look across the hall at the guys who are doing the identity management stuff. And when we talk about identity management, you know, stuff that was originally built off directory and now is about identities for people throughout huge systems. I mean, we manage CNN.com, for example, uses Neville technology to manage their identities. And there's
is that
a lot
their eDirectory,
of,
is it? Or something?
eDirectory is the foundation on that one. Okay. But there's other companies that are also using Identity Manager, which synchronizes identity between different systems. And one of the coolest things is the Identity Manager product, which does all this identity synchronization stuff. The guys on that team got infected by this open idea, but they can't just take, you know, you can't take 20 years of code, or in the case of most of our identity stuff, about probably 8-9 years of code when you get all the way down to the directory. You can't just take that and throw it into open source or shove it out there when it wasn't developed in the CLIA originally. It's hard to do. But these guys came up with something, a way that they could get people involved in an open process. And what they did is they opened up their builds. They post their builds of their software nightly to a site, and they have milestone checkpoint builds where customers actually get to download this. And bear in mind, this is software not that you or I would use as hobbyists. Yeah. This is stuff that people are using for running huge internet sites and things like that, you know, very high security financial sites and things. And these guys are putting the code, not the source code, but the actual builds,
yeah,
up on the web for download by these customers, and they're keeping in touch with these customers through dialogue, through email, through forums, and things like that. Yeah. And so people get to actually test this stuff, throw their weight against it every night, and it's not just a, hey, look, this is our latest. It's a, hey, look, tell us what you think of our latest.
Yeah,
so they bring it back.
Is an actual cultural thing changing at the grassroots of Novell? It's not then just a headline grabbing.
No, no.
Can I ask who came up with this idea? Of open sourcing.
Of open sourcing.
Novell.
You mean Novell getting into. Not the identity manager side.
The whole kit and caboodle.
Okay. So, you know, that one.
NetWare was kind of dwindling, you know, in the sort of mid 90s.
Right.
And everybody perceived Novell, whether it's true or not, everyone perceived Novell as sort of, you know, going down, so to speak. And then they seem to just have turned themselves around.
Yeah, yeah. There's a. If you look at where what happened with NetWare, a cheaper operating system that people were familiar with, didn't need to have nearly as much prowess with,
yeah,
came along. It didn't do the job as well, but it did it good enough.
Good enough, yeah.
And that taught Novell, I think, a really important lesson. We still stand by NetWare. We still support NetWare and all that kind of stuff. And we still think it's a better operating system than the operating system that came along.
Who was the guy who said, I know, why don't we go in this direction there?
I have no idea who the guy was, because I've seen I've seen Chris Stone say that it was him.
Right.
And I've actually had him say that it was him to me. Okay. And I've heard other people also claim it.
Yeah.
And, you know,
it's probably a combination of parts, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
It may well have been a lot of people thinking the same thing.
But it happened during Jack Messman and Chris Stone's time that they were there together.
Right.
I have a question.
And it's just snowballed, you say?
Pardon?
It's just snowballed. You know, you said as people, more and more people got involved, more and more people started pushing it. And
yeah, well, I think the SUSE Linux acquisition was the big thing. I mean, suddenly, yeah. I was on Novell eDirectory when eDirectory was first released. It's the first product that ever ran on Linux that Novell ever released.
Right.
And I actually just joined the team as director of product management there and got to help with the release of that. And it was the first thing Novell ever did on Linux. And we didn't do it right necessarily. We got beaten up by a few people about how the install worked and things. As you'd expect when you first get into just about anything, first dip in. But what was your question?
I have a question.
Go for it.
It seems that I'm looking at Linux specifically here. I'm not looking at applications. If you look at Linux distributions, there's very much a sort of a enterprisey kind of business side where it seems at the moment most people are probably using Red Hat. And then on the other side, you've got the kind of people who predominantly will listen to Lug Radio, who are fans, hobbyists, people who work in business, but also have an interest in open source outside, right? And it seems, from my impression, that most of the people who use that are using probably Ubuntu or possibly Fedora. But there's this kind of big gulf in between the two. You know, I don't know many people, for example, on the sort of the hobbyist side who are using something like NLD. But I'm beginning to hear of more businesses using something like Ubuntu. Now they're going to promise sort of support and with Fedora as well.
Quite a lot of people are in SUSE, though.
So it seems. So basically, what I'm getting at is that it seems like a company like Novell, who are a large corporate company, seem to be targeting the enterprise field, but maybe at risk at losing some of the kind of the early adopters who are probably jumping onto something such as Ubuntu. I mean, what are you trying to do? What are Novell trying to do to kind of achieve that kind of goal?
That's one of those questions.
That's kind of a softball, isn't it?
Hey?
That's an easy one. Yeah. Hi, I'm Ted Hager. No.
Because obviously you want to hit both sides, essentially. You want people using NLD. Though?
Yeah, well, you know, I honestly think, and you know, I'm in part, I'm paid to believe this, but I think it's very important that you have community backing as well. I think that Ubuntu has torn apart Fedora, really, as far as community building goes.
Hmm.
And, you know, you got to look at it and you got to admire it. when you see that, because so many people have moved that direction right now. And I mean, I listened to your programs, what was it, the Christmas edition, I think, with the voicemails all at the end of it.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I mean, there's some insane people out there as far as commitment to it goes. Where they just repeat it over and over and over on the voicemail. But if you look at what Novell's trying to do, we first had to get a version that was truly an open version out there, something that people could get into. Last August, we launched the OpenSUSE project, which, by the way, gentlemen, I have for each of you, and well, maybe for each of you, an OpenSUSE shirt.
Ted looks suspiciously at
Ack. I brought for each one of you guys. So yes, I think what you asked me, where's the swag? And I brought each of you a shirt for it.
Thank you.
But the OpenSUSE project, that's where things start. Yeah. We made SUSE a fully downloadable distro. That had to happen first, so you could just get it for free. Yeah. It's the same version that you can get in the box pretty much when you go to the store and buy it. And there are people out there, we didn't pull it off the shelves when we did this, because one, we looked at one of our competitors who'd done that and gotten completely beaten up for it. But two, there are people with vertical collections of every version of SUSE that they proudly display. And it's like, you know, a wine rack or something.
They got very large beards.
Probably they do have long beards.
No
shampoo.
Sounds like your own bunch of nutters there.
But the interesting thing, though, is that I'd have thought that, particularly in the open source Linux distribution world, you'd get people who, let's say for the sake of argument, they're fans of Fedora, okay? Thank you. And they're fans of Fedora. Ted hands John a nice t-shirt.
This is where I blow smoke all of a sudden by bringing shirts out. Jonah, what was your question again? Shirt.
So, we're wise to you.
I mean, this isn't nice a question. Shirt, I mean, the point I'm making is not specifically something that Novell can fix. This is something that I don't understand why there's this division between hobbyists and corporates. You know, I don't understand why. Essentially, you could look at it as being the corporate world is basically the same kind of software, but it's got support in it.
Right.
And what I'm interested to know is surely something such as Ubuntu or Fedora or Novell could make everybody happy with it.
So I think one of the biggest things about the support that people don't understand is versus the community side that people don't understand is community side. People don't want to have to wait forever to get the new versions of the software.
Something we talked about last time.
Yeah, you guys talked about this in the very last episode that you did. People don't want to wait forever, but to support a version out there and to have it in cycle, this means your support organization has to be able to know what's the stabilized supported version, and they can't have multiple versions or every 6 month kind of release happening. An open source community is going to demand having the stable version come out fairly often, as well as the unstable, you know, builds and things. And you can't do that in a corporate environment. Yeah. You don't want that kind
but
of
am I right in thinking
you
that's
stamp,
the point
stable.
I was making last But that's time. The division, yeah. Am I right in thinking, largely between something like OpenSUSE and an NLD? NLD is essentially a snapshot of real, stable, rock-solid software that you'll deploy in an organization, whereas OpenSUSE is the kind of thing that the people who do the deploying of NLD will run to keep on top of everything, and keep on top of the technology.
Exactly. Shall I tell you why I wouldn't roll out NLD at the moment? Because it's got XGL, and everyone would just be playing with the cube all day long.
The cube is cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah, people shouldn't have cool stuff at work.
No.
Are you not that shit? They should have like a great big blackboard and some chalk, and then they can fucking get on with their work. I want to ask a question. You talked about community and how Novell are engaged with, or becoming more engaged.
I think we're getting more engaged.
Yeah, which is great.
Yep.
You know, don't get me wrong. And to be honest with you, the change from being the change to become a community focused organization is a much bigger cultural change than the one where you just take all the code and put it on a public CVS server. Right. So going community focused is a lot more difficult than going open source.
Yes.
When you said that things like Identity Manager, for example, you can't just take the code and go, here is a tarball. Check it out. Right? I agree with you. It takes a bit more than that. So you've gone to the community stage first. Do you intend to then go onwards? Because one of the accusations I've heard made against Novell and other large companies, Microsoft being a case in point here, is that they've bought
it. I don't like those in the same breath.
But I know that's exactly why I'm bringing it up. This is something that free software people will say, that people who say, yes, we're engaged with the community, are picking up the open source idea But not picking up the free software idea. They're interested in saying, look, we're open for business. but they're not actually making their software free. Now, whether that's just an opinion held by the Free Software Foundation and Acolytes or not, I'm not sure. Acolytes. But is your intention... Oh, that's good, wasn't it? Is your intention to move beyond like community focus into actually opening the code? Or do you think that just bringing the community on board is enough?
Well, okay, so... that goes in multiple directions. But let's start with the Linux distro to begin with.
Yeah, OpenSUSE is open. Absolutely.
OpenSUSE is out there, right? But what about all these cool things that we're demonstrating inside of the Linux desktop right now? SUSE Linux Enterprise Desktop, the new name. Yeah. I had to get it in there.
Is
at least
it? Is
once.
That the new name?
It's not Novell Linux Desktop. Yeah.
I forgot about that, actually. It's SUSE Linux Enterprise
Desktop. And the Enterprise, SLED, you could call it. That's what people call it for short.
It's called the word Enterprise.
Somewhere one of my Marcom managers is just like turning right now. But I mean, that's what a lot of people are calling it internally right now. But SUSE Linux Enterprise Desktop. All the different things that you've got inside of that, these things like XGL, like Banshee, like... F-Spot, and these things are all showing up in there. All of that is also in the SUSE Linux distribution out there.
So there's not a big difference between those.
Yeah, on the Linux side, with your Linux distributions, you've made the step beyond being a community firm into being an open source firm, genuinely. Absolutely.
Right.
I'm thinking about things that weren't traditional. I mean, SUSE Linux was already basically an open source thing when you took it on. So you got to continue the openness there. It's taking things that weren't open before and doing that. I mean, you did it with Netmail to make Hoola, absolutely. But what about things like Identity Manager, like NetWare?
I think what you're seeing at this point is Novell's doing it not as a... We said we're going to be an open source company, and therefore we're going to shove it all into open source. We're not doing that so much. What we're doing is we're kind of cherry picking the things that make the most sense to put out there.
Sure, it's a gradual process.
I understand it's a gradual process. The point I'm trying to make is your end goal for it all to be open, or are you going to say it's a gradual process? We can open some stuff, some stuff not.
Put Ted on the spot. Is everything at Novell going to be open source?
The
reason I ask this is because that's exactly the commitment Simon Phipps made for Sun Software, and I was quite surprised at that. It wasn't a case of we're going to open some stuff. May never open. He said quite clearly, Sun's going to have everything open eventually. They're not going to do it all in one go, and they are going to have to go through quite a long process. And I expect that to be exactly the same with Novell. What I don't know about is what the end goal is. Whether things like open source actually figure into the identity manager people's minds, or whether it's just openness.
So if you look at the whole thing, I don't think what you're going to see is Novell taking every product we've ever made and pushing it into open source. You're not going to see that. But on the flip side, we made an announcement in the identity management space saying that there's got to be an open identity infrastructure that's out there, because you see companies like Microsoft jump out there and start saying, well, we're going to have this, this back end here that you can have all your identities in. Yeah. These different things, whether it be Hailstorm and things like that have kind of failed in the past or what. IBM, Novell, and a few other companies got together and actually launched a thing called Higgins Project just a little while ago. And the Higgins Project is actually going to attempt to be an identity framework out there on the net. Don't kill me on the framework thing there, guys. This is some big stuff on software. But that's what Novell's goal is to get more and more things as they make sense into open source, whether it mean like what we did with Netmail, bringing it out there as Hoola and converting the code. That was no small task that the Hoola engineers did.
Not at all. Yeah.
You couldn't get the guys to do it with eDirectory right now, I don't think, because I was on product management and we explored that a few times, and it was, wow, this is so massive to do that, and there are so many things that we'd probably want to do differently these days than what we might have done 10 years ago. That one component there wouldn't make sense to bring out in open source. So it's not something like the Higgins Project going.
You see, I don't understand that, really. I mean, I don't work at a big company. The software development we do, my team does, it's all small applications, so we haven't got anything like eDirectory or whatever. But what stops you just opening it? I admit absolutely that if you looked at some of the code, you might think, if we had our time over, we wouldn't write it that way. And I agree with you. But on the other hand, you're prepared to sell it as a product, so it can't be that bad. the compiled binaries you get from it. You don't go, well, the code underneath there's rubbish, so that's no damn good. I mean, it's okay to be a product, and therefore it can't be that much fun. So obviously you'd want to go through and remove all the comments which say we have to work around shitty NT again, or whatever the comments say. But what else would you need to do as part of the cleanup process before you prepare to open your code to the world?
The cleanup process sometimes involves simple things like this whole chunk of code here doesn't have any kind of internal documentation in its source. It didn't get put in there originally, or something like that.
Surely, that's
conjecture when I say that. By the way,
from what I've read about of large companies, from speaking to companies who've open sourced something fairly large. The problem isn't the code. The problem is the intellectual property, because there's lots of separate companies' intellectual property tied up in it.
Yeah,
which is typically the reason why it's such a nightmare experience trying to get something open source.
That's the problem the Netscape people have. They take all the Java stuff out of it and so on and so forth, because they're all licensed. The thing, SSL libraries and stuff.
And there is RSA technology inside of eDirectory as well.
I'd say that looking at whether Novell open source code is only part of the issue. I think the main thing from my perspective is that Novell are obviously very good at the whole package in terms of support, training, and feeling like you're getting software from a company that's going to be around in 5 years, right? In the same way that Microsoft are very good at that sort of thing. And then if you take somebody such as Ubuntu, and I know Aid's going to turn his face up, but if you take someone like Ubuntu, we can't deny the fact that the Ubuntu guys have really built community really well.
Yeah.
So I'd say that the Novell guys are doing a really good job in that kind of direction as well by employing people like Nat Friedman, Miguel de Casa, doing things like Hoola, kind of every website being fairly unique and individual as opposed to just being another corporate page on Novell.com and seem to be making the right moves in the community. I just think that if people like Canonical can make the community thing work really well, and Novell can make the whole the enterprise feel work really well, I just think I can't believe it's so difficult for one organization to do the whole thing really well.
It sounds
well.
Like Novell are planning to
do it. That's where I'm interested in, is that I know like Ted's obviously involved in user communities and that sort of thing. And that's, I'm just interested in how Novell are doing that, because I think if Novell can crack that community thing, if people start using Sled because they feel it's not only enterprise ready, but it's also really good community distribution.
You know, you should get out to Lugs.
Why would you want
to?
It would be good for me to do that. I wonder who I could do that with.
What is the compulsion, though, to say that Novell has to do both the community, as in grassroots, ordinary users, and the enterprise community building?
I'm not saying they do, but what I'm saying is that certainly at the moment, I'd say that a lot of people who push for open source at work will start out with a community-based...
The question
is brand more. You don't want to have to... If you say, okay, you should use Linux, Novell Linux at work, and you should use Linux, a completely different kind of Linux, at home, then you've got to push Linux twice in two different fields and push different names on it.
The other thing is that community...
To get acceptance, you need a name.
The community...
You need Red Hat, you need Novell.
But the thing is, you need
if
that...
If I said to my boss, Ubuntu, he'd look at me like I was having a fit.
But Aid, you need that really for the everything that surrounds the software. So, for example, when someone thinks of Novell, I don't think people necessarily think so much of the software, but they think of the whole package of services and support and everything around
it. Exactly.
When you think of Ubuntu, you only think of software. You don't think of
anything. Is this where you start telling us about all the new services that Ubuntu are going to start selling?
No. The point is that if the community work on the software, and Novell are obviously doing that, and then Novell have got that real great enterprise back end to it, then everybody wins, because you've got really good community-driven software that's also developed by a vendor, and you've got this brilliant framework around it for doing the whole services thing.
I think Ubuntu are approaching it from the opposite direction than Novell are. Novell started off with all the support and the infrastructure around it, but they haven't really got the community stuff, and they're working on it. Ubuntu have got the community.
And doing it
But they don't have all the support and services, like you said.
Yeah, it's a fair assumption.
If you say to your boss, he'd laugh. But on the other hand, if you said to me, okay, you want a great desktop for home that you can just download and use for free and everything will work perfectly, you should use Novell Linux desktop, I'd laugh as well. Now, I'm probably wrong about that, but then again, your boss is probably wrong to not know about Ubuntu.
I totally agree.
It's definitely going from the other perspective. And the interesting thing is how the two, obviously, essentially, they're not rivals in open source because developing in the same direction, but it'd be interesting to see who kind of hits the thing that they're going for first, whether Novell hit it with the community side or whether Ubuntu get all the services stuff set up. I suspect that it's a harder job for the Ubuntu guys.
Yes.
Because Novell have already got that brand, and, yeah, and there is no brand really for Canonical. And building communities is something that, which is part of the reason I suspect they've employed the, you might correct me wrong on this, Ted, but I'm assuming that part of the reason why Novell bought Zimian and SUSE was because there's some very, very good high-level developers working there who've got community skills as well.
Yeah,
in addition to being good
hackers.
They've
got community repute, I think, more than anything.
Yeah. That's it. That's it. I would say that Novell got two things out of both purchases, and that's awesome technology from both SUSE and from Zimian, but you also got you also get these luminary guys. Mm. But I mean, we'll hire certain people like Jeremy Allison. He came to work for Novell after having gone to BrainShare.
Yeah,
he went to BrainShare under duress, and when he came away from BrainShare, he said, "I got to work here," and he left HP and came to work at Novell. Novell Fantastic. Hired him, and we continue to employ him. Because Novell wants to have some of these great people.
He's not only a good hacker, but he's a really good community guy as well.
Right, yeah. But you're correct on the other side, and that is, yeah, we've had the enterprise space for a while. We've been playing in that area. We've been selling to business for a long time. We're learning about community in a lot of ways, and I'm one of the guys who's actually throwing myself against it and learning it. Like, you know, Novell Open Audio, I started that podcast. I listened to yours. I listened to a couple others. I said the show format works best, and, you know, one of your listeners actually said, "Where did they get that idea?" Yeah. Yes, I got it from here. So
something else goes on the list of stuff Lug Radio have done.
And unfortunately, I can't get the dynamic tension you guys can and curse like you guys can. I have bad words for you later. But anyway,
ours hasn't got a company name at the beginning. If we were like IBM Lug Radio, we probably couldn't do it.
Yeah, totally different.
But we are now making as much of an effort as we can to start doing more of the end user community type thing, because I think we've got a great lineup as far as the developer community goes. They don't need an evangelist for that. For the end user communities, though, and there's two of them really that Novell deals with. There's the old NetWare one. There's also the Linux one. That's what I'm out here trying to do.
Cool. Before we kind of round this all up, what would you say to people out there listening who are just your ordinary Linux users, ordinary hobbyists? Why should they switch to OpenSUSE, for example, or SLED even? Why should they start considering Novell as their next Linux distributor?
Why should they consider? Okay, so give me a little bit more of the of who this person is. Just any user,
any of us guys, just basically someone who does the word processing and an email at home.
You know, that's one of the topics I'll have throughout the Linux tour this week.
Right.
I think one of the big reasons why you want to look at Novell is Novell's actually got the people that are building things like Banshee, like XGL.
Yeah.
These kind of things start showing up inside of Novell. This is where those people that create so many of these exciting desktop innovations, that's where it's happening.
Okay, recently I saw a talk about research going on at Microsoft by a guy called Rick Rashid.
Who's head of Microsoft Research.
He's head of Microsoft Research. And to be fair to him, I know a lot. There's a lot of kind
How
of...
How did the brainwashing go, by the way?
What?
I ask again.
Shut up. I know there's a lot of negativity about Microsoft. But
not for me anymore, because they may be looking to a bright light, right? I thought he kept saying there were four lights, but I could see five.
Have you quite finished?
How's that little thing in your neck they put in?
Have you quite finished? Use Windows Vista. Okay, so I saw this dot, and he's...
I went to see Microsoft, they tried to turn a human being into this.
he's grown up through the ranks of academia, and he's a very well established researcher. And they showed loads of stuff like the Minority Report kind of stuff and all that kind of thing. And to be fair, the things that they were demoing were really impressive.
User interface in Minority Report?
Not the whole system.
Tom Cruise comes out and fixes your computer for you. Wicked research.
Yeah,
I wasn't thinking the movie was that good of a movie to begin with that you'd want to recreate it.
The kind of looking into the future stuff, they've not got there yet. But they've got the
whole
user
interface.
They weren't
burying people in pools.
No.
Okay. I think we're extending this metaphor a bit far, to be honest with you.
A good example of what they've done is he showed how he had like a photograph of... Kind of like a park with a dog sat in the middle of the photograph, and then he showed how they've written some software to just pull out that dog, and fill in the background, because obviously when you take a photograph of a dog, you can't see what's behind it, and it's got this algorithm, so it fills it all back in. It's really quite clever stuff.
What if a cat was just sitting behind the dog?
Cherry picks the front thing out of the...
Pulls it out, but then it's clever enough to replace the background and stuff like that.
Replace background with what?
So you can't see the dog anymore.
With what would have been there, so it might be the tree behind it.
Ah, right, so you're not extracting the dog with the point of keeping the dog, you're extracting the dog with the point of... The dog going away and filling in the background. So it's for getting rid of Trotsky in pictures. So,
yeah.
Right, okay.
good analogy there.
And they're doing stuff like that. Now, it got me thinking, obviously as an open source guy at this thing, can the open source community do really high level... I'm not talking about research...
Cutting-edge technology.
Yeah, real cutting-edge stuff. Now, I'm not just talking about hardware, I'm talking about software, like the image example.
Yeah.
You know, can we come up with this kind of stuff in an open source way? Now, obviously, there's companies who are... I know IBM are putting some money into research. I don't know if Novell do this, put money into research, but
I think they must have like a research and development department.
But
all big companies.
Otherwise, the fuck's
Microsoft have been, to be fair, they've been renowned for a number of years of doing real clever research. Their research unit has been pretty impressive.
Research in which company to buy, you mean?
Eh?
without being mean here, the labs do lots of really cool stuff, but it's not often you actually see it
become something other than
just a cool research project.
Yeah, I think the term is circle jerk. I think there's a lot of that going on where they do incredibly cool research. And some guy asked Rick Rashid about it, and he said, look, the whole idea of research is that there are no boundaries. If you thought, I must do it and it must fit into a product, then it isn't really research.
No, I agree.
So I'm not saying that that's necessarily good or a bad thing.
I think it's very noble of Microsoft to fund people just go out and do cool stuff. Do cool stuff for the hell of it, and maybe it'll turn into a product. The goal shouldn't be to turn it into a product.
I don't think it's an altruistic act.
No, you see, that's exactly the point. Microsoft are presumably funding it with the intention of making their products
better.
I don't know how successful that goal has been.
But I get the impression that Microsoft just say to these guys, look, just knock yourself
just
out.
Just fuck about well, with
if,
stuff.
If they fuck about with 10 products cool. and like one of them turns into a product.
Yeah.
So 10 projects and one of them turns into a product.
Then it's probably money well spent.
Exactly. Oh, yeah.
And the thing that was interesting is that you think of like this kind of research, like I said, the Minority Report thing, that's not really instantly accessible to most of us. But the image replacement thing, that kind of thing, could just be dropped into Windows.
So what you're asking is, can we in the open source community come up with that kind of
research? This kind of stuff?
Because I think we can come up with the ideas. I'm not sure if we can come up with getting people involved.
Because
and
we've got some really clever hackers. There's no doubt about it in the open source world. We've got some really clever people working on open source software. You know, a lot of them are paid by companies. A lot of them do it in their spare time. And I'm just wondering whether most of open source developers are kind of thinking within a vacuum of approaching the kind of stuff, you know, we want an Exchange replacement, we want an email client.
We're scratching
this kind of
itches
thing.
At this point.
Scratching a lot of itches. Whether people...
I don't think I agree with you. I think if you look at Microsoft Research Labs, the open source research labs is SourceForge. Quite often, you see someone come up with a new idea, and then you poke around, and some guy did half an implementation.
And it released in
2002, made a couple of commits to CVS, and then gave up on it.
Yeah.
Our problem is not doing research and coming up with ideas. The problem is actually turning them into something semi-real.
Yes, and
the advantage that Microsoft have got is they can go, invent this cool thing, and then they invent a cool thing, and then they go, right, okay, you've done that cool thing. I bet you can do something else cool with it. Carry on. And the bloke goes, oh, I don't know, I'd like to do a new cool thing like hoverboards. And they go, no, do this thing. Here's some money.
I wouldn't say for a second that SourceForge is the open source research base. I'd say that it's where people write. I'd say that 90% of stuff on SourceForge is another IRC client or another CD client.
I agree with you. I agree. I'm not suggesting that everything on SourceForge is revolutionary research. Okay. But I'd say a lot of the revolutionary research either turns up on MIT guys' homepages, or it turns up on SourceForge somewhere. Because some bloke went, I've had a really cool idea for something like, I don't know, Symphony OS, right?
Yeah.
It's not enormously revolutionary, but pick it as an example. Yeah, they're trying to redo how the desktop works. So they built that, and you know, they set up a SourceForge project or something to distribute it. Our problem is people do it for a bit, and then no one buys into it because no one finds out about it, and then they get bored and fuck off.
I mean, a good example...
And we've got no money to pay people to sort of carry on with it.
Yeah, but money's not necessarily the issue, because if you think about the history of British boffinism, you know, the backroom boys...
Is boffinism a word?
It is now. The hovercraft was invented in some bloke's garage, right?
Yes, Sir Christopher Cockerell.
That bloke.
He was Christopher Cockerell then, and now he's Sir Christopher Cockerell because he invented the
hovercraft.
Now
he's dead. Well, and you know, you've got a whole history of things being invented, like the Macintosh, and all, not the Apple Macintosh, but the coat. You know, all these things were invented just by blokes who were scratching.
Pretty
an
much
itch.
The Macintosh fits into that as well. To be honest,
right? But, see, the big.
So why can't we do that with software?
But this, the big, this is the big, exactly
the big,
what I'm on about.
The big,
yeah.
That's the whole premise of the book. What is it? Adventures from the Technology Underground actually covers that whole thing, where they make the case that it's small time hackers doing what's following their passion, scratching their own itch or whatever, that actually results in weird things like telephones and those kind of things.
Yeah. The killer is...
What's the book again?
You either need...
Adventures from the Technology Underground. Yeah. Who wrote it? I can't remember.
You've got the ISBN number there, right?
if you're going to do that, you've either got to be a guy who is not only good at coming up with a cool idea, but is also a guy who's good at telling people about it and marketing it. Or there's got to be two... I mean, if I invented the Macintosh
died.
Or whatever, right? Exactly, that's the problem. Half the ideas died, and they could have been really, really good, but they didn't take off because the guy invented waterproof cloth in his garage and then told three of his mates, and they all went, brilliant. Four guys had waterproof coats, and that was it.
I don't know. I think I think the main reason why we're...
Publicity is almost more important
everybody
than
needs
the invention.
No, that's bullshit. I think the main reason why it's not happening so much in the open source space is because, first of all, it's really, really hard to do this real next generation kind of research. I'm on about different user interface kind of ideas and paradigms and stuff like all that kind of stuff. I'm talking about real next generation stuff where we think this isn't possible. I think
what are Microsoft Research doing that is next generation amazing? I mean, removing a dog out of an image is quite cool, but I wouldn't say it's any more revolutionary than Symfony's own.
No, I'd say it's totally next generation.
No, it is.
No, I agree. Back on this one.
You look at an image, right?
Moving a dog from an image is the same as this Symfony's.
I'd say you look at an image.
That's not revolutionary. Hang on. A telepathy interface is revolutionary.
Hang on a second. Ask the question. Let someone fucking respond to the question. Right. The thing is, if you look at an image, typically most people will look at a bitmap image and think it's basically an unordered collection of dots. How can we generate any kind of structure from that? That's the part of the reason why photo manipulation is not massively revolutionary in terms of making selections.
Don't talk shite, right? The people you know who just take a picture with a digital camera and then go, "Look, I can remove red eye in iPhoto." Think like that.
No, but the point I'm making is that's one example of where they're coming out with, you know, they're basically saying we can write software that can pull something out specifically, right? They can just pull out this thing from an image. I'd say that's fairly...
They can make sense from random.
I have seen open source software which will pull a thing out of an image. The point is that it pulls that thing out of the image because that's what you want to keep. If you've got a picture of a dog, it'll grab the dog out. You just go grab them
completely.
Yeah, and there you go then. So that's just as revolutionary, and it's done in open source.
No, it's not. It's not, because how can you... How is that just as revolutionary? Where
it's not much further.
Pulling something out of an image and then
calculating
the background. The point is
that's not a massive quantum leap in revolutionariness.
Hang on a second. Right, that's one example. For example, another thing that the guy showed us was how they've created this thing where it can basically shine like a user interface onto just a regular desk. And then you can interact with it on the desk and stuff
they
like that.
They sell them on ThinkGeek.
But the point...
yeah. But like the Calibre infrared keyboard,
is that there's all of this kind of stuff going on, right? And yeah, it's some of it's going to be available now to certain people. And the point I'm making is that, you know, people are creating this kind of stuff. Why isn't the open source community creating this kind of stuff?
The point is, I think they are creative.
Where?
But you're going...
Give me an example.
It's not as important. Okay, the thing which pulls a dog out of an image, which I have seen. I have seen a photo thing where if you want to find a photo, it just gives you a little paint program. You just roughly draw it. So you go, I wanted one of the landscape photos I took. I'll just colour in the top a bit blue, and I'll colour in the bottom a bit green, and I'll draw a house, right, with just a box of yellow, and colour that in, and it will look through your photos and find the photo that matches that.
But the point I'm making...
Right? But that, according to you, is not revolutionary. I think the problem with you is that you're affected by the idea that the open source community, we're good hackers and everything, but Microsoft are a proper software company. We can't do as well as them.
That's total bullshit.
Why is it that you're saying that Microsoft Research are doing revolutionary
let me
stuff
answer the question.
And everybody else isn't?
Let me answer the question.
The
fact of the matter is, you know fucking full well that I don't just think Microsoft are just, you know, somehow a better software company. You know full well that I don't think that.
You've just stated that they are. No. You just said the open source company
no,
aren't.
I didn't.
The open source community aren't doing research like this.
The point
of Microsoft are.
The point is that
you just said it 5 minutes ago.
Listen to me, right? The point is that if you look at what Microsoft are doing, and I'm not just just talking about Microsoft. I'm talking about Microsoft and IBM and all of these, and MIT and all of these other companies who are doing paid research. Yeah, you can pull out of your ass singular examples of little open source bits of research, but in the majority, people aren't doing research. Fact, right? I'm not saying that we're necessarily doing no research or we're doing loads of research, but from my experience of looking through open source software, there isn't an awful lot going on. And surely I want to know why that is.
Surely the collected efforts, though, of all the boffins within the open source community, though, adds up to something that could be equitable to a small to medium software corporation. Obviously not someone with the billions of dollars of Microsoft. But yeah, it's dispersed, so that maybe there needs to be like openresearch.org to help coordinate things.
And that's what I was thinking.
Hang on, I'm missing something here. When you talk about the open source community, right? If I'm an MIT professor and I do some research, and then I write some code and release that code as open source, am I part of the open source community?
Yes.
Right, in that case, a lot of the MIT stuff is open source. You said we're not doing research.
Actually,
hang
on a second. No, I'm not talking about... You're saying if somebody's paid by MIT,
yes,
but then they open source
then
it.
Then they open source code.
No, right. I'm not talking about that.
So your question is not the open source community, it's why aren't hobbyists doing as much research as professionals?
I'm talking
in the
about
area.
Doing. I'm talking about research as an open source project.
People who are not doing it full time.
Yes.
Okay. Then my answer is you don't have as much time to do it.
Yeah. And basically, also, do you not think that
I know, and that's exactly my point. I'm not saying that I'm not saying for one second that this is what any one position. I'm saying I know that people aren't doing it because there's not enough time, and people need to be paid to do this kind of stuff, and people need money. For example, all the hardware stuff that's going on at places like Microsoft and IBM. You need money for that.
Yeah, no,
the point I'm making is not that people aren't.
That's unlucky.
Gentlemen, a word coming in edgewise.
The point
here,
I'm making
here comes sliding in it. I'm cutting off Jono.
I'll allow Jono to
okay,
finish.
You pointed out something pretty interesting a moment ago, and that was, a long time ago, and that was something about how, like, there's this project maybe that's out there in CVS that got a little bit off the ground, but it didn't really get anywhere after that. It just kind of got abandoned. And one of the things that I think that's so cool that's happening right now is pluggable frameworks that are happening. And when I say frameworks, I'm not meaning it in the negative way, I'm meaning it in the positive way. What I mean by that is look at XGL, the CompEase layer on top. You can make plugins to that. Look at Banshee, you can make plugins to that. And it doesn't really limit you on what kind of plugins you can make, but you're up there on this much higher level. You've got this great springboard to jump off of to do your innovations, where you don't have to build from the bottom all the way up to there. And I think that's where we're going to see a whole bunch of things start to happen. It's the same thing. You've seen from layer upon layer, new Linux, and then you get all this other layer on top, and you've seen the desktop suddenly blossom and things. You've got to have the substrate below it in order to get
but
that
that's
kind
the thing,
of innovation
is that,
there.
That's the thing, is that it seems like the cool stuff that's going on in open source is fairly iterative. It's something that's been based upon something fairly recently before. Whereas the kind of stuff that I'm talking about is stuff that is
great leap forward that never makes it into the light of day.
A quite dramatic leap forward that a lot of it won't ever see the light
of day.
Isn't
the bar too high, though, for blokes in their garage to be doing that?
But
sort of thing
that's why I'm asking the question. I mean, like I said, I've got no answers. I've got things that I've seen. The thing that I've seen is that there's not a lot of this kind of stuff happening.
Right.
But there is another point there. About three or four shows ago, I said, should we be trying to do something revolutionary? You know, step away from the desktop that we've got at the moment and do something completely different. And everyone said, no, that's a fucking stupid idea.
Right.
Right? But that's what research is.
I said that, I
by definition, if you're doing blue sky revolutionary stuff, it can't look like what we've got.
Completely.
But that's he's saying you're now, should we be doing it?
No, you're talking about two separate things.
Why? That's what I don't understand.
Because if you're saying, should we be coming out with something revolutionary and totally different, I think we should be coming out with things like that. But the fact is that it's going to take years for that to mature into a product that people can use.
Yeah.
But what you were talking about, my perception of what you were talking about was that why aren't we doing this kind of stuff now to be used now in our desktop today?
No, not particularly. In that case, I may have explained it badly in the previous one. But the point was, why is, you know, if people said, you know, if half the GNOME people said, we're not going to work on GNOME anymore, we're going to work on GNOME 4.0, which is totally revolutionary, has a telepathy interface, and people would say, but that's a dim idea, because it's going to take 5 years to come to fruition. And in that time, there won't be any GNOME.
But I think we need these kind of things going on the side. Like, for example, SymphonyOS, we've talked about in the past. That's a great project. I'd say it's probably not ready for most people to use in their desktop.
Agreed.
But 2 years from now, it might be. And 2 years from now, we might be seeing it in.
It's not aimed at most people, though, is it?
But the point is that it's nice to have this kind of research going on.
Yes.
In
parallel.
In kind of a lab environment that's then rolled into a product. The interesting thing is we're seeing lots of people doing hardware hacking. We've heard about the whole Make Magazine stuff and what people are doing there.
That's magazine.com.
We know that people are doing. We know that a bunch of people are doing some crazy kind of software stuff in terms of. You know, different ways of Jacosha. Compiling code.
And we've got like Timmy.
Preloads and all that kind of shit that happened a few years back.
LVMS.
But it's just, it seems that there's no, from what I've seen, and I might be dramatically generalizing, but I haven't seen anything that causes the same kind of wow factor from anything I've seen from the open source community.
Well, you haven't seen it from Microsoft until you actually went there.
No, I had. I read the Microsoft research. No, I do. I'll tell you what.
Have a poke around SourceForge. Seriously. Look at, you know, don't go there and think, I need a mail client. I'll have a look. Just have a poke around at some of the more outre projects.
I've been poking around SourceForge since I started using it in open source. And I've become accustomed to a lot of stuff since I started using open source. But I haven't seen anything that's made me sat down and think, fucking hell, that is really quite dramatically cool.
The distinction is, if you're actually looking at the code, I agree there's a lot less of it. If you look at the ideas the code's meant to do, then okay, people are coming up with the ideas. But, I mean, I could have come up with the idea of XGL. I didn't. But I could have come up with it 5 years ago. But there's no way I could have made a project out of it because I'm not even halfway competent enough to write that kind of thing. Coming up with the idea...
Maybe it's a completely different
process from actually implementing it. If you poke around SourceForge and try downloading stuff, what you do is look for screenshots. You're looking at code, which means you have to find somebody who can come up with brilliant ideas and then turn them into software.
But the other thing is, to be fair, and although I think XGL is a really good thing, to be fair, the ideas behind XGL weren't thought by Novell.
No.
They were an Apple thing in many ways. The whole idea of a spinning cube and 3D acceleration on the desktop is largely an Apple thing. The fact that we've now gotten that on the Linux desktop is an XGL thing, and we all love that, right? But I'm just saying that these kind of innovations pop up fairly rarely, I'd say, on our desktops, right? But I don't see so much of it coming from the open source world. And I agree with you that we need to be doing real zany stuff in the side, but... that can later be productized in different ways.
Do we even see much of that coming, just, you know, as a small ender? Do we even see that coming from the proprietary corporate world even that much? Because
completely.
If you think about it, in terms of desktop, what have we got? We've had bloody Xerox PARC, and that's it for about 50 years.
Lots of people say, yeah, we had Xerox PARC, they invented the GUI, and it's basically the same as Microsoft Windows Vista, and it fucking well isn't. But it is still an evolutionary rather than revolutionary jump.
Well, that's my point.
Hey, you guys, it's the end of the show.
Oh, my God.
I just kind of the American accent thing.
You're not kidding.
You might have noticed. So anyway, it's the end of the show.
Could have followed up.
It's time for some emails, and there are now 5 of us to read emails.
Wow.
Amazing.
Cool. You are a full-time employee now, aren't you? Yeah?
I'm getting paid the same as the rest of you.
Good.
which is a good thing there's 5 of us, because we've got a shitload of emails. Certainly
have. We really do have a bulging
sack. We're going to have to nip through these fairly quickly.
Okay, so the first one I've got is a nomination for some server space.
Hey!
We'll give them a whole server.
Yeah, it's going to... Who is what?
Who wants the nomination?
Ah, who is it for? Right, indeed. How about the bloke who maintains paper sizes? After all, it's the least you could do after using him as a bad example for so many times. And what I like about this email is they put at the bottom, note, I am in no way associated with the paper sizes library, nor do I know who does it. This is more of a tongue-in-cheek suggestion.
Jono,
honestly?
You think?
Jono, mate, I think he's having a go at you.
It's a great example, isn't it? You know?
No! Bloke's dead now.
I'd love the paper sizes guy to email in and sort of say...
Yeah, but what he'd do is he'd strip the server down and just use it as a filing cabinet for maintaining paper sizes. Master. Okay, are we going to go clockwise or counterclockwise?
Well, let's go this way.
That's anti-clockwise.
Anti-clockwise.
That's what we say.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
Not counterclockwise?
No. Is that anti-circle?
Jeez, I'm going to go home and screw everybody up.
Is that a threat or something?
Whatever you want to do, Ted, you just keep your private safety
set. Put the gun down.
Dear Lug Radio, the Lug Radio chatter usually keeps me smiling during my commute, but your previous episode... was asking for trouble. There is no such thing as that Belgian kiss you lost in great disgusting length.
That was you, Jono.
Well, now it's Belgian. They spelled it here. It's Belgian, isn't it?
Belgian. No, it's not Belgian kiss. It's Belgian kiss.
Oh, I misheard it.
The Belgians.
All right, well, you can accuse us Belgians of being untrusting, closed, reserved personalities, have nothing special, but that might be because we kind of keep away from the Brits.
Yeah.
Don't blame that you. Usually come over in great numbers to Belgium to drink way too much beer, piss in the street, piss in the letterboxes, and generally make a great nuisance of themselves in Belgian port towns. Like,
they shouldn't have beer that tastes
oh my
so good.
Goodness, too many vowels.
I think enough of that email.
That sounds like a good weekend, though. I think so, we should do that.
So who sent that email in?
That one came in from, I don't know.
From Dennis Hulutensblüten. it's from, oh my God.
Serves you right.
It's from Euston Beach Rugby. Euston Beach Rugby.
What's his name?
Euston Beach. Oh, come on, rugby player.
His name?
Euston.
Go on, Ack. Go on, translate for us.
For goodness sake.
He says John.
It says Euston Beach.
Yeah, it says John. The guy's name is John.
It says Euston Beach.
East Beach Rugby is big.
Okay.
Anyway,
so John, thanks
very much,
John.
I will never mention the Belgian kiss ever again.
Which, let's just summarise, is French kissing, but with phlegm.
It's not, actually, apparently.
No,
apparently it's from the Mary Whitehouse experience, yeah. And I'm wrong,
Melky,
I'm sorry.
Melky.
We've had an email from David J. Soares, who works for .com.
Who?
He says, hi, my name is David Soares, Chief Business Development Officer .com. We recently launched the world's first consumer He basically tells us about his product, which we won't read out on Log Radio because we're not an advertising company. The supports Linux, Mac, Windows, and universal platforms. So if you're running universal platforms...
It's right, though. We're not an advertising company.
Don't they make films?
yeah, I suspect so. He says, we would like to take this opportunity to inform your listeners and readers of this new cutting-edge technology.
I'm sure
If this is something of interest, please contact me at the phone numbers below to discuss in detail.
Give his phone number out.
It's 555 3190210.
That's probably an American number. So
it's 555.
Sounds like a sucker.
So yeah. So if anyone can guess who that was from, let us know.
And yeah.
Oh, my go. Mail from Chris Todorski, or Teodorski, perhaps. It's a USA Lug Radio Live. First introductions. He's Chris Teodorski, and he's on the board of directors for their local lug.
Wow. The lug has a board of directors.
Is anyone who's not on the board of directors?
Is he curry director?
Oh my God, board of directors. That's
taco
that's
director.
Massively complicated. Anyway,
how do they spell board?
Yeah, we're board of directors as well. It's the Western Pennsylvania Linux User Group in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Today he was listening to the latest episode of Lug Radio, and he heard the letter you read about a listener, and I heard the letter you read about a listener who desired a Lug Radio Live in the US.
All right.
Yes.
And he's saying,
hey.
He says, I'd like to be the first to offer our Lug as the host of any future Linux Radio Live in the US.
Hey.
So if you guys are any interested in planning an event in the States, we're very serious about getting it organized.
Cool.
Hey, well, Pittsburgh's got the Aviary of the Americas and some old steel mills.
Brilliant.
There's some other stuff too.
Sounds like the kind of place where you'd film a Kiss video. Like in a steel mill. Rock and roll will never die.
So over to you, Matthew.
If you want to run Lug Radio Live in America, just let
send us
know.
Send us the money.
Yeah. And then send us the plane tickets, and we'll be there.
And then send us the plane tickets.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So let me ask you guys a question on this. What if we were to say during Brain Share next year? Novell might
that'd be
look
lovely.
At doing
it.
Yes, we can, we'll yeah? say yes.
I need another
Lug Radio Live
though.
There. I think that would be fun.
Yeah, sounds good.
I'm just throwing the idea. I didn't talk to anybody about that before. Now I'm probably getting myself in trouble, but it's
suspect,
an idea.
I suspect that Lug Radio Live and Novell Brainshare are possibly incompatible in terms of the kind of direction.
Oh, no, we just have to put warning signs up. You know, not
parental advisory.
Do not bring your children.
R-rated.
Exactly.
Is that the one? R-rated.
Let's explore these opportunities.
Right, I have a guy with a funny surname. It's
No, you have an email from a guy with a funny surname.
Yeah.
You don't have the guy.
Dennis Lichtenhaler.
Ooh.
From Germany.
Lichtenthaler.
Never.
Or Lichtenthaler, perhaps.
First of all, let me say that you're doing an amazing show.
Thank you.
And that's it. And that is the only kind of thing that reliably keeps me awake during my long and early bus trips. Oh. Anyway, he says, I was just listening to season 3, episode 13, and you were talking about release cycles.
Mm.
I've been a happy Gentoo user for quite some time now. And after having tried almost everything else, including Ubuntu, it's the one distro that works for me, especially right. concerning upgrades. I never have to worry about installing a new version of my distribution, as it's as easy as setting a link to a new directory. So anyway, you thought it was worth just letting us know about that. Keep up the great work.
So there's never like a new release of Gentoo, there's just Gentoo. You just... it's always the most up to
it is always
like a rise of Gen 3.
Exactly.
It's not coming.
Gen 4.
Yeah. We've also got an email from Tom Good from The Good Life, who says that he thinks it's absolutely fine to grow your own food in the back garden. He loves it. He's got no problem. His food's always up to date and beautifully fresh. And we say, good on you, Tom. Move on.
Go on, bald.
No one is going to get that. The Good Life. 70s comedy with
IMDb.
Oh, Felicity
Kendall. The Delicious Kendall. Oh, yes.
Felicity Kendall.
And Penelope Keith, who wasn't bad.
From someone who's got a very long name, and his first two names are Ad Star.
What?
Oh, no, that could just be a Gmail.
No, that's
thing.
Just because I cut and pasted it all out of Gmail. Shut up.
Okay, Christopher Yeeman.
Yeah,
a man from Trinidad.
Again,
why did you all go Yee? Yeah, then.
Because he's a bloke. He writes to us a lot from New
York. Have you been to the last few recordings? He writes in all the time.
Does he? Okay. Yeah.
He's sitting in your garden as we speak.
Welcome back. He's the new stalker, I bet you.
Yeah.
Love the show, as always. Just wanted to pose a quick question. In a discussion with a friend into open source, he said that he thought open source would never become mainstream if there were no Microsoft. Do you agree? Do you think open source would have gained the same traction had Microsoft not fucked so many people in the ass? His words, not mine.
Also, the idea is
he's saying that we wouldn't be where we are if Microsoft wasn't...
Because of the common enemy.
Because of the common enemy.
Yeah,
exactly. The whole open source community rose up in response to the main enemy. I'm not at all clear that's the case.
But it's certainly given a lot of traction out there. Yes. I mean, having somebody to hate that we can all hate, you know, keeps us from infighting.
It's got a lot of... It does not keep us from infighting. I talk bollocks.
Okay, keeps us from solely doing infighting.
I think people are busy enough hating KDE or hating GNOME or hating Ubuntu or hating Fedora or hating Novell to be busy to find time to hate Microsoft. Well,
I think there's some mileage in it.
I think there's a lot of people out there who've been badly pissed off by Microsoft.
I don't know.
It's a proportion of people, isn't it?
I don't know how good idea it is to say, yes, we want people in the community whose motivating reason for being in the community is that they hate Microsoft.
But the GPL came out of a hatred of certain
non-free software
activity. So, you know.
Next.
Oh, is it my turn to operate?
Yeah. Oh, it's your turn, yes. Okay.
Hey, you got
hitters, Ted.
I wasn't even...
We're going anti-clockwise, remember?
That's right, anti-clockwise. have we done this one yet? The Ben Thorpe?
Nope, we haven't.
No, we haven't done the Ben Thorpe.
Mr. Ben.
Good, because he's got a long one. I've been waiting to talk for a while.
He always does, yeah.
Says, "'Tis I, just in case Aid, who's named after a cool, refreshing summer drink, gets confused between me..." Okay, I added the cool, refreshing summer drink part. "'Gets confused between
cool
me
and
Ben Francis again.
Ooh.
Just a quick question, to say hi, and make a couple of points, which I will now go into the litany. We'll read point number two.
Okay.
I wondered whether or not ACK sees any area of compromises between closed source and open source where the existence... Ooh, I shouldn't have gone to the ACK one. Dang. Where the existence of closed source software on an open source platform, i.e. Linux, increases the awareness of open source. I was thinking that ID Software, makers of ET, not only make their games available in Linux closed source, but also open source a lot of their old stuff, and have probably done a fair amount to promote Linux as a platform." Man, that was a long one.
I would say that I think it does increase awareness of Linux, but I'm not clear that it's a good idea because it's bad precedent. If we encourage people that closed source software is all okay, you can just use Linux and any closed source software you like.
Thank you very much.
5 years from now, if we've won, we won't have won anything.
Mr. Ben, you should know. No compromise is the response.
No, you know better.
None whatsoever.
I've had an email that I'm sure Matt's going to be pleased to hear. This comes from Jen Phillips, who is a regular, long-time listener of the show. "Dear large gents, just a quick note to say thanks ever so much for the corporate tat you didn't send us after my photo of Russ won the gold medal in the Look Queer for the New Year competition. I was most excited when the postie didn't knock on the door the other morning, and the large non-package was great fun to unwrap.
Did it land right next to the Make magazine subscription?
As for the quality of the tat itself, well, I've seen some useless corporate tat in my time, but this really did bowl me over. I honestly can't think of any use for my new tat at all. I can't wear it, I can't stick it on the mantelpiece, I can't sell it to some saddo.
But you can't shove it up your arse.
I can't even give it away. It's just a shame the logos are so difficult to make out. Your loving fan, Matt is the biggest dick in the world, Jen."
She
didn't say the last bit. So,
before we lay it, Matt, I think Jen may have torn the arse out of that joke a bit, to be honest with you.
To be fair,
and we never do that, do we?
No.
I think if you look at tearing the arse out of a joke in the dictionary. Is L4 grinning faces? So Matt, explain yourself again. This is the second time you've been shooed on air about corporate tat.
Well, I have posted it all now.
You said that the last time.
No, I didn't. I said I was going to.
You said, yeah, I've got it in the car and I'm posting it tomorrow morning.
Yeah, and then he said, here's some jam, but you can have it tomorrow.
I had some bad news that night, so I had to go home early.
Right, okay.
But is the truth of the matter. I've posted it off. I wasted about an hour on Saturday parceling it up and taking it to the post office. And I've posted it. What do you want? It's free. Shut up.
I reckon there's going to be no more corporate tabs competitions in the future.
Oh, the only one I haven't posted is Thomas Porteous's one or whatever his name was because he didn't give us his address.
Right.
We emailed him.
There's no excuse for that.
Okay, Ack.
Right, okay. I've got an email here called Live Event. It says, you know how it is. You spend all your working life trying to keep a good home together and provide for your loved ones. Money is put by to ensure a decent education from your offspring. Send them off to university to improve themselves and have a better start in life than you ever did personally. How do they repay you? They meet a lovely girl, get married, and in the fullness of time produce an absolute princess and then move as far away as they can so you hardly ever get to see them. They criticise your taste in everything, telling you and everyone who will listen you're a closet Daily Tory graph reader while publishing their own website.
What?
This must be a story you've heard many times in the past. This is exactly what's happened to me. I've followed his career closely. I'm not like other parents of famous sons who appear out of the woodwork, but I'd like to be able to see my son perform at your live event. But that means travel and living expenses. For these reasons alone, surely an old git like me who is trying to keep up with the modern world and its technology is entitled to a concessionary ticket, and it's from my dad. The bastard.
I suggest that we don't want two languages in the same room.
I don't know. I mean, I'm kind of contractually obliged to offer him a concessionary ticket, really. Because then he paid for me to go through university. I think we knocked £2 off his ticket.
That was a shameless pimping of your dad getting a concession.
What are the chances of me giving you that email when I divvied them out?
I know, it's good, wasn't it?
I think there was some kind of sleight of hand
there. No, there wasn't, actually. Anyway, Matthew.
Hang on, does my dad get a concession?
Of course he does. Yeah,
yeah, of course he does. I've met your dad, he's cool.
Although, technically, we should charge him more for bringing you into the world.
how your dad could produce such a pathetic runt as you is beyond me. So, yeah, concession.
By me.
although
yes, Dad, you can have a concession.
Although we're thwacking the nuts for creating
this. How big is his dad?
Harsh.
Thank you.
His dad didn't actually have him as well. Men don't give birth to people like Ack.
Not over here in England, anyway.
No. Or they do that in Australia.
Well, maybe they do it in the Microsoft Research Lab. It's got such advanced technology.
Give him birth. Men give him birth. I don't know. I've seen Junior. Maybe it was filmed there. Anyway.
I have an email from, wait for it, Urko Fernandez. And I think he's from... I think you're from Spain.
Oh, don't like to kiss me.
Oh, dear, he's not Irishman. Oh, dear. Fernandez is his surname.
Oh, Fernandez.
Help yourself to my lips.
He says, dear, oh, dear, Lug Radio presenters, props for proving that Linux advocating can
props.
Be and must be funny first and doctrinal last. I personally want to thank you all because I usually listen to the show whilst I jog a few kilometres. That's a few 0.62 miles for you Anglo-Saxon Britons.
Yes.
And for some time now, I'm forced to run about an hour and a half, having my shape greatly improved.
Jesus,
so the more you lengthen the show,
that's quite
the
a long
better
run.
My fit become. By the way, it took me 3 years to start understanding this funny English accent you call Welsh. So now I can start laughing my ass off in the middle of the street.
Maybe he's referring
to... Boyo.
Oh, how are you doing, is it?
Hey, is it?
Would you like to come over here, boyo?
Oh, Morita.
I'm very excited.
Well. Thank you very much.
You're the closest, there.
I'm not even remotely close to Wales. I've only lived closer to Wales than you three do, but only by about a mile and a half.
You've just experienced the Welsh. Carry on.
So he goes, so I can now start laughing my ass off in the middle of the street whilst running like a weirdo in front of total strangers. The so-called Lug Radio effect, I must guess.
Yeah.
My only petition is for you to make more vodcasting available. Matching your voices with your real faces is kind of spooky and yet entertaining.
Speak right now. You do not want vodcasting in this place. I promise you, this is not a vodcast environment.
Why are they calling it VOD rather than vidcasting?
Don't know, mate, but he signs off with reveal yourselves.
Presumably what we want to do is get something like Diva and like blue screen the background and pretend we're sitting on the beach or something, rather than in Jono's dirty sock drawer, which is actually where we are.
Hey, at least I've got the sock on my microphone.
That's the initiation ceremony.
Okay, another person called AdStar. David Madeley.
Shut up!
Oh, David Madeley.
And he's got a bit of a shoe-in over there for young Jono.
Oh, great.
It says, it seems that interviewee volumes and interviews from your latest show are incredibly quiet. You have reduced Mr. Garrett's sexy voice into a rasping cigarette tar and liquor-destroyed husk. The second guy is quiet too. It sounds like you have replaced your phone with two tin cans and a piece of wet string. Not your usual quality, D.
I'd like to know if David Madeley's ever met Matthew Garrett, because he is a cigarette tar-driven drinking machine. And it obviously just come off the crack pipe when we interviewed him.
It's a bit it's like, Tom Waits of open source.
Oh yeah, I like suspend. That's basically how it was.
He just is hibernating.
So why was it so quiet? Is it because his phone was it's a bit choppy as well, wasn't it?
No, it's because John, I fucked it up.
It was largely a problem with I think it was a problem with his phone, because I put it on there in exactly the same way as I always do it, and so it had all the compression and stuff on it, but for some reason it just sounded quiet. I think we had two fairly bad lines that night, and sometimes we do get interviews with bad lines, so you can't avoid these things.
Can you like fix that?
Yeah, you can use a voice over IP technology.
No, I don't mean fix it by making the phone call louder. I mean post-processing.
No,
does it just boost all the noise as well?
Part of the problem is because it's their phone that's the problem. So Matthew Garrett was probably just ringing off a regular phone line, and he might have had a crappy line, and that's the reason why it sounded a bit crackly. If we had VoIP, then maybe.
You're shaking your head as in
VoIP to VoIP. That might be better.
I don't know. I mean, other people at the other end have got VoIP, but have indeed said to us, can we make a VoIP call to you? And we've said no.
No.
So
we are not fitted out for VoIP right now.
What's that on your desk next to the computer?
It's a can of Tetleys.
No, next to that.
Oh, there's a CD.
It's a VoIP phone, isn't it? Is it plugged in?
No.
Shut up, then.
I could plug it in, but it wouldn't be plugged into the mixing desk, and it wouldn't be plugged into anything that could record the conversation. So, yes, there's technical problems. Aid can fix it. He's a...
Absolutely. This one's from ad star Brandon Stafford.
Piss off, all of you.
Brandon Stafford says, I would like to request a concession on admission to Lug Radio Live 2006. My reason is this. I'm not coming.
Yep, you can have a 100% concession.
As a result, I will receive less benefit than those local enthusiasts who do show up.
Hang on, does that mean he wants to pay £3 even though he's not coming?
He's saying your show is worth something, though.
I'm not sure. Like,
we're monetizing.
I'm not sure. Yeah. Like, Age plan to basically charge everyone who's not coming £3.
He wants a concession.
I think it's a brilliant idea. We can then retire to some kind of gold yacht off the edge of Morecambe Bay.
Do you actually want a gold yacht?
I do.
It's your canonical example.
It is. Seriously, it's just
the whole thing. Lots of money.
When I was a kid, and I used to watch DuckTales. Right, I always dreamed of some kind of, you know, thing of money that you can dive into, like Scrooge McDuck. Yep. The next obvious step is a gold yacht wearing a gold sort of bowler hat. I think it's perfect.
I'll break your neck.
Okay.
So the thing he does say, though, is that he thinks £5's a little steep, and he wants £3 admission. If you do so, he promises he won't show up.
Fine
with us. PayPal is £3. That's brilliant.
Actually, the guys here would request that you don't show up to the next 12 Lug Radio Lives and send in the money now.
In advance.
We're going to have to tie things up fairly quickly because we're running out of time, you know.
Uh-oh.
I've got one here. This is another concession, though. This is from Adstar Alex Sutcliffe. And the subject is, my bitch wants a concession, which is... somewhat degrading to his bitch. He says, hi guys.
Keep going. He cracked himself up.
Yeah. Hi guys, my girlfriend is demanding that she receive a concession for Lug Radio Live. Her arguments are the usual, i.e. she's a girl, she has tits, she has other bits. However, she also feels that she deserves a special mention for knowing that in the naming episode 48, the Diva Cup, you were sniggering at some sort of receptacle that one uses to catch menstrual blood or something. I was skeptical at first, as you know, but I wouldn't put it past you. Anyway, how about a concession for Rosa? To be fair, I'm prepared to pay the full rate for myself. I just can't... I just figure that if I'm paying for her too, I might as well get enough change so that I can buy her a beer as well. Yay. The show rots, etc.
Yep, rocks,
etc. Yeah, and you're right about the Diva Cup. That was Axe's fault.
It certainly was not Bacon.
Who names the show?
And who named it this time? I said to Mr. Bacon on IRC, would you like to name tonight's show? And he said, what should we call it? And I said, I don't know. Do you want something to do with Diva? I said, Google for Diva. And he came back and said, call it the Diva Cup. And I said, why? And then he laughed about it. You pathetic, puerile four-year-old. So it was Bacon's fault.
Well, liar.
Well done.
Liar. You said, there's the Diva Cup. Do you think we should call it a show? And I said, no, of course we shouldn't.
Oh, you fucking
empire.
Let's rock on.
Honestly, moving swiftly on after yeah. Mr. Bacon lies. Email from David Favreau from Hanoi in Vietnam, who says, I like your show, but apparently we're way off concerning the relationship between Next Step and Apple macOS X. He maintains that Next Step and macOS X are basically the same thing. 90% of Next Step's code still lives on in macOS X, apparently. And if you look at the class names for the X Tools development environment, the prefix NS stands for Next Step.
Oh, thank you.
If you say so, we believe
actually,
you.
Yeah, I remember reading about that. Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Board of the Next Step there from Novell.
We're probably going to have to do the last couple now, are we?
I have got a very short one.
I've got a very short one as well.
And a very short email as well.
Well, let me just nip in there. Jonathan Megan, long-time listener, long-time stalker, says, there is an Ajax-ish toolkit called ZK1 that makes use of Zool components in the browser window, referring to last week's...
The desktop applications.
No, that's just what he said.
Ooh. And a quick email from Fated.
Sorry?
No, sorry, what was that?
Ted got lost.
I got lost on what he said. I have no idea.
Continue. It's because you're an American.
the beauty of it is you can wait a week and then download the MP3 and listen to it again.
I'd have to hear myself.
Or the og.
You could even lay in the bath and listen to us if you want, if that's sort of...
Or you could
you said that to be quick.
You could jog for 0.62 miles.
Fated writes in asking for a concession, and she says she wants a concession because she'll burn aid in effigy, fire regulations permitting. Why does she want to burn me, by the way?
Do you know, she said something very different about you to me. She told me that she's got a bit of a thing for you, eh?
Yeah.
Plus, she doesn't have to pay any money at all, because first of all, she's an international visitor, and secondly, she's a speaker. So she gets speakers and international visitors get in for free anyway.
Yeah, but she wants to burn me in effigy.
You mistake me for someone who cares. I mean, maybe we'll put that on the live stage.
call me a cynic, but I don't think she's actually wanting to burn an effigy.
She mentions fire regulations.
Well, she may well do.
Slash me is scared.
I'm up for aid being burned.
Yeah, I'll have a look.
Yeah, I say burn aid.
Burn aid.
Burn
aid, that does sound like some kind of...
it's a benefit.
And some antacid
tablet. So we all go out and eat a really strong curry and then... Feel the burn.
Feel the burn, my burn.
So, going to mention Log Radio
Anything
Live?
Anything else?
Or?
Yeah, 22nd, 23rd of July.
It'll be good.
It'll be
good.
Brilliant.
We'll Logradio.org/live.
Logradio.org/register to get your tickets.
Way to pin for the show.
So, let's wrap it up then.
Oh, yeah. Thanks a lot, Ted.
Yeah, thanks for coming on, Ted.
Thank you for coming on.
My pleasure. And hopefully I can get Nat Friedman not to show up at Log Radio Live.
We're not too disappointed. We'll get him on the next show.
We will. We'll get him on. I'm sure he was busy.
Go back, give him a kicking.
He was busy filming some kind of, I don't know.
Damn, now I have to remember all the questions that I was going to ask you and didn't have time, so I thought, I'll ask him
now. Damn, now I get the chance to think of some questions.
Bye-bye.
Bye.